Recursion. The theoretical and the practical are the keys to their own reinforcement. Theoretical. The full implementation of the theoretical and the practical is the means by which their strength achieves its most complete realization. Practical. Installation. Through edict and usage of the theoretical and practical at every level and at every instance, even and especially including those situations where the correct course of action appears self-evident. It is these moments that provide the greatest risks and opportunities. The obvious is treacherous, thus doubly in need of rigorous interrogation. The application of the theoretical and practical in these instances thus reinforces the approach for all other circumstances. Gilliman, Towards a Union of Theory and Praxis, 111-54-40. Chapter 3. Insight. Potential. Actual. The Kavaska's deck vibrated. Hyrax felt it through the soles of his boots. It was the pulse of the launches. The heartbeat of the strike cruiser had become the drum of war. He was on the bridge. The rest of the 22nd chapter was descending to Thoas, while the destroyers, once more, remained in orbit, their strength chained, their way of war denied. Iasis had given the order. Perhaps he had come to the decision on his own. It was very possible. He had been given his position for a reason. Ultimately, though, it was Gilliman's distaste for what the destroyers were and did that held them at bay. Hyrax had come to the bridge to watch, and to be seen. The situation of the destroyers was known across the chapter's ships. That they were again denied the battlefield was not a source of shame. Nonetheless, the frustration of the companies translated into tension and discontent throughout the chapter. He had spoken with Latches, whose first destroyers were stationed on the frigate Glory of Fire. Latches was on the bridge there, too. The captains were in position to observe and stand ready, and to present the unbowed pride of the companies. Hyrax was in the strategium, standing in the pulpit. It projected forwards into the space of the bridge. He was visible to every officer, serf, and technician. He emanated a sculpted calm as he watched the oculus and listened to the launch reports. He gave his full attention to the deployment. He would watch and study every step of this war. He and his company would be ready the instant an order to deploy came. Bootsteps sounded behind him. He turned. Legionary Kletos had entered the strategium. His armor, like that of all destroyers, was predominantly black. With the departure of the other companies, the only Legionis Astartes heraldry still visible aboard the Nemesis chapter ships was the dark of unforgiving, brutal, scorching war. The colors of necessity, Hyrax thought. We do not engage without reason, but we cannot be ignored or forgotten. War forbids it. Cletus saluted. You wanted to see me, Captain? He said. Hyrax nodded. I'm taking a sounding, legionary. How would you describe the mood in the ranks? Cletus cocked his head. He was not wearing his helmet, and he made no attempt to moderate his expression. He had been badly burned in the hive on Septus 12 when the cybrids had sprung their trap. His face was a mass of glistening scar tissue. Unlike Hyrax's wounds, which had accumulated over the length of his career, the mark of Cletus's injury had come all at once. The right corner of his mouth was pulled down, making him appear perpetually sardonic, which was not that far from the truth. With due respect, Captain, Cletus said, I think you can guess. I choose not to. Cletus shrugged. Right. Ugly, then. And this was why Hyrax had called on Cletus. The legionary was plain-spoken to a fault. He balanced on the razor's edge of insubordination with such regularity he would never make sergeant. As a barometer of the company's mood, he could not be bettered.
Uglier than the last time.
I should say so.
And the difference is?
Cletus snorted.
The chapter master.
Hyrax lowered his voice.
Go on.
Cletus took the hint and spoke softly, for Hyrax's ears alone.
He's wrong for us. He's an outsider several times over.
Might as well be from another legion.
How bad is it?
Bad enough. If he tries to change us into something we're not.
Cletus trailed off.
If he tries, then what?
Hyrax said, his voice harsh. Cletus cursed.
I don't know. No one does. We can't stop him, so we'll resent him even more.
The discussion is that involved already.
Yes.
Theoreticals without practicals, Hyrax thought. The insight struck him as important, but he could not see what to do with it. No practical for me either. What he could see was an immediate danger. Resentment bred mistakes.
The talk, he said. How widespread is it? Does it reach beyond the company?
Cletus nodded.
I was speaking to some brothers in the 223rd. They're no happier. I've heard rumblings from other companies, too.
The more Cletus spoke, the more Hyrax's personal anger was mixed with concern. He had been thinking of the long-term transformation of the chapter when he had spoken with Cirrus.
That long-term was clearly troubling the rank and file, too. But it was the short-term that worried him now. Resentment over the time ahead could jeopardize the present. Reassure our brothers, Hyrax told Cletus. We will always be who we are.
Oh? How?
Are you doubting my word, legionary?
Just curious. As they will be.
He dodged the question.
If an identity can be altered so easily, it isn't worth preserving in the first place.
Of course, said Cletus.
The corner of his mouth twitched down even further.
That will be all, Hyrax said.
Cletus saluted and left the strategium. Hyrax turned back to the oculus and the display of the great plane on Thoas. Engine flares and the heat streaks of drop pods burned through the atmosphere. Already the first mobilizations would be occurring in the western reaches of the plain. And, in the east, the orcs would be stirring. He did not need any augur readings to tell him that. He could read the patterns of the war's birth without seeing them. The thoughts of the Nemesis chapter's morale ate at him. His hope, in observing the war, was to find the opportunity to prove to Gilliman the need for the destroyers. Deployment and vindication, they would create the path out of his festering resentment. They would be the salvation for a chapter that he did not believe needed to be saved from itself by an outsider. Now, though, his hope receded before the dread his talk with Cletus had fed. The risk did not lie with the destroyers, held far from combat. It lay with the rest of the chapter, no less bitter but deployed in the field, where the mistakes could happen.
Theoretical, he murmured. Resentment in troops is a force multiplier for errors. Practical. Deploy them to see what happens.
With an effort of will, he went no further down that mental path. The speculation was unproductive. It was also, he knew, unnecessary. The theoretical's truth or falsity would be manifest soon enough. He turned his attention from the oculus to the pict screens in the strategium. He watched the lengthening columns of company runes and landing coordinates. He tried to focus on the expanding minutiae of the landings to fill his mind with the effort of visualizing the countless vectors of the action below. Despite his efforts, the questions he wanted to avoid rose, dragged to the surface by the very chain of logic the Primarch had instilled in his sons. If Hyrax wanted Gilliman to see how vital the destroyers were, it followed that Gilliman was blind to that truth. Was he then blind to the consequences of Iasis's appointment? If so, what else might he not be seeing?
This is your anger speaking,
Hyrax tried to tell himself. He had never been good at lying to himself. War was thunder, and there were as many forms of warfare as there were kinds of thunder. Gilliman knew them well. He could tell from the rhythm, timbre, and beat of the roar, the nature of the combatants and the state of the clash. What he heard was not cacophony. He heard the language of battle, the world-shaking argument and counter-argument of a debate drenched in blood, embraced by flame. He knew all the articulations of strike and retaliation. Most of all, he knew the thunder of his legion. Gilliman stood in the open hatch of Land Raider Proteus Flame of Illyrium. Inside the hull, the Invictari Honor Guard waited to be unleashed. Gilliman drank in the thunder of the gathering strength of the Ultramarines. This was the thunder of preparation, of a potential building up until it must be unleashed, a fist that could topple mountains. It would be easy to believe the sound alone could flatten all before it. The sky trembled, battered by the constant roar of descending transports, heavy lifters, and gunships. As above, so below, and the ground trembled too. It shook beneath the treads of tanks, armored carriers, and the march of thousands of ceramite boots. Gilliman looked up. The stars wavered, their light distorted by the contrails of arriving ships and the roil of dissipating promethium. This far west of the Cordillera, Thoas was dark with eternal night, cold with eternal winter. The plain was barren, its rocky protuberances worn down to smooth ripples as the superheated air of Thoas's dayside rushed with unceasing monotony to the frigid night. There was heat in the winter now. The bones of the world were blasted by the flame of retro-firing engines. There was light, too. It was the harsh gaze of landing lights and the targeting beams of tanks. The tremors of the deployment traveled up the hull of Flame of Illyrium. Gilliman felt them through his gauntlets when he clutched the edge of the hatch. He breathed deeply of the sharp burn of spent fuel. And he listened to the thunder. It was the strength of his sons. It was the sound of the great machine of flesh and will, of discipline and steel, that was unfolding across the plain. It was the tectonic rumble of Thoas's reclamation. A force whose destructive power was unlimited, but whose purpose was, in the end, to purify and to build. Your strength acts through me, Father, Gilliman thought. Your will is mine. Let this world be part of the human supremacy once more.
Odd choice, a voice was saying over the Vox. It was Habron, in the driver's compartment of Illyrium.
What is? Gilliman asked the Tech Marine.
Thoas, Habron repeated.
The conditions of this world do not invite initial colonization, even less a full civilization. How would it be sustained?
Temperatures are still above freezing at the base of the mountains, Gilliman said. The eastern end of the plain was within the Terminator Zone, held with the mountains in a permanent limbo, neither dawn nor twilight.
A narrow region, Habron objected. Hardly large enough to sustain a planetary population.
Are you thinking of what was, or what is to come? Gilliman asked.
What is to come can be supplied, said Habron. What is past was isolated.
Then we should look for answers in the ruins, Gilliman said.
Time, I think, that we reclaimed them.
The chapter masters have signaled readiness.
And the orcs? Are they ready?
Are they coming to greet us?
He knew the answer. His choice of site for the deployment had been the result of rigorous calculation. It had been close enough to the mountains for the orcs to see the signs of descending ships. It had been far enough away to give the Ultramarines the time and space to mobilize. The operating hypothesis was the orcs would mobilize the instant they realized their hold on Thoas would be contested. The question was how quickly the orcs would arrive.
They are, Habron confirmed. A moment, Primarch. Updating.
There was silence for a few seconds while Habron used the Explorator augury web. The Proteus's Auspex sensor suite was Gilliman's sight where no sight was possible. It could peer through the walls of a fortress, pinpointing structural weakness and enemy concentrations. The orcs were still too far away for the system to come into play, but Habron had linked the Explorator to the augurs and cogitators of the McCrag's Honor. The ship looked beyond the mustering zone's horizon to the advancing greenskins. The McCrag's Honor fed what it learned back to the Flame of Illyrium.
"They are closing rapidly," Habron reported. "They will be visible within the hour, assuming we hold position."
"Which we won't," Gilliman thought.
"Can you give me a target?" he asked.
"Large numbers of heat blooms. They have many vehicles."
Habron was quiet again for a moment. Gilliman waited without prompting him.
"Too many to make any determination at this stage," Habron said. "The heat signatures have formed a single mass. I'll know more when I can use the Explorator's sensors directly."
"Then let us meet the foe,"
Gilliman switched to the command channel of the Vox to address the entire deployment. He climbed out of the hatch to stand on the roof of Flame of Illyrium. The Proteus was stationed at the easternmost edge of the landing zone. "Warriors of the 13th," he called. All eyes would be looking east now, towards the enemy, and towards the position where his legionaries knew he must be. He was visible to many, and even those too far away to catch sight of him would be gazing in this direction, sensing his presence with certainty. They were certain because of who he was and how he had made himself known to them. Their genes were his. His being informed theirs. Their instincts flowed to the same purpose as his own. He was as his father had made him, and they were shaped to the same ends. But what the Ultramarines knew in their blood, Gilliman had ensured was also a direct, conscious, ever-present truth. The Legion's command structure was predicated on the powerful commander. From the squad level on up, the leader gave more than direction. He shaped the battle. He was the pole star for his men, the figure of inspiration, and the sign of the eternal advance. Every squad, every company, every chapter was a series of vectors, all moving towards their individual goals, and each goal one aspect of the unified mission of the Legion, a multiplicity forged into a perfection of order. Gilliman was the point of fusion. He was the fountainhead of command and the confluence of goals. He was the leader who was as ultimate as he was necessary. On McCrag, before the coming of the Emperor, he had already embodied the role, but he did so as an unthinking part of his identity. It was only once he had taken command of the 13th and undertaken to come to a full understanding of the connections between himself and his genetic sons that he had articulated the theories of what he was and must be. So now, at the dawn of another battle, he was the supreme commander, and he was the culminating symbol of command. He directed the movements of the Legion, and he was the ideal they looked to even when he was not physically present. Gilliman the symbol had a reality that surpassed Gilliman the physical being. That was as it should be. That was as he designed. It was part of his great work. His labor was far from done. There was another component to the integrity of command that was yet incomplete, and that he could not do alone. He needed Gage to face the realities of continuity. Gage was resistant. That was understandable. But he would do his duty, in time. They all would. "Ultramarines!" Gilliman voxed. He raised the Gladius Incandor. The blade flashed silver, cold and pure as the stars of the Thoasp night. "The Greenskins are approaching. March with me. We will meet them. We will purge them. We will return this planet to the human dominion." He paused and pointed in candor at the horizon. "The enemy's way of war is the way of the mob. Ours is the way of order. We fight with force, and we fight with reason. Reason that is imbued in every decision and in every blow. We are the science and truth of war, and we will shatter the presumption of the foe. We are honor and courage. Honor and courage!" The shout came from every throat in the Legion, and from every Vox speaker. It was the greatest thunder, rising above those of the hundreds of engines. It was the incarnation of the sublime. In a less secular age, he knew, what he had heard would have been experienced as the roar of the Legion's soul. As it was, his blood soared when his sons answered. He dropped back into the hatch, still standing, and faced the east. His lips pulled back in a grin of ferocious pride as the rumble of flame of Illyrium's engine became deafening. The tank surged forwards, a beast slipping its chain. In the same moment, the Legion advanced. As the voices of his sons had taken up his war cry, now the gunships and transports and tanks answered the roar of Illyrium. The immense thunder that had shaken earth and sky as the Legion mustered now transcended itself. The individual warriors and vehicles joined together in a colossus of war. Gilliman did not like the concept of perfection. That was Fulgrim's obsession, and Gilliman doubted his brother would have seen fit to bestow that label on the Ultramarines' advance.
Gilliman had seen the look on Fulgrim's face during their joint operations. The approach of the 13th lacked finesse in his eyes. War, for Fulgrim, was an art. Strategy should be aesthetically pleasing as well as successful. Gilliman thought it was enough for strategy to be sound, and for a legion to be unstoppable. The Ultramarines marched, and instead of perfection, there was precision. Gilliman prized that far above aesthetics. Precision and rigor. War was not an art. It was a science. It was the application of overwhelming force with the full consciousness of where and how and why. Art could come in the wake of war. Art belonged in the creation and reconstruction that were the true ends of war's means. Success in war was to bring it to a swift and complete end. Behind Gilliman, stretching off as far as he could see to the left and right on the plain, the Legion's strength advanced so implacably it was as if a tectonic plate were going to war. Gilliman breathed in the roiling smoke of hundreds of engines. He took in the flash and burst of vehicle lamps and the glow of gunship engines. The Ultramarines had brought the light of the human galaxy to the surface of Thoas. He turned his eyes to the horizon and voxed Habron. "How fast is the enemy approaching?" "Still accelerating," Habron said after a moment. "And variable across the horde." He read off a group of figures and the average speed of the leading edge of the Greenskin army. Gilliman calculated the rate of advance of the two forces. He gazed hard into the east. The promise of dawn glimmered there. It would never arrive. One did not wait for dawn on Thoas. It had to be hunted, and the Legion was heading its way. The orcs, though, were not as implacable as the unmoving sun, no matter how much they deluded themselves about their strength and power. They had already been dislodged from their high ground. They could be made to move. They were rushing to the night and to their oblivion. He would see them very soon. Gilliman used the moments that remained to vox gauge. "What do you see, Marius?" he asked. "What do you want me to see?" Gage wasn't fooled by the question. He knew Gilliman was not asking whether he had spotted the foe. "I see our legion," Gilliman told him.
"As do I."
"Do you see its shape? I don't mean the formations. I mean what they signify." A pause.
"The theoretical given practical form," Gage said.
"Yes," said Gilliman. "And in this moment, the practical made theoretical. That's the paradox of the march to battle. Can you see it? We have lost nothing. The formations are flawless. Our strength is at its greatest potential. This is the perfection of the moment before battle." He said perfection deliberately. The embodied potential was an ideal, one that would encounter reality and instantly transform. This was something he didn't think Fulgrim would ever understand. Gilliman had certainly never been able to make his brother see the impossibility of his quest. Fulgrim believed the ideal could exist in battle, and he pursued its manifestation. Gilliman knew what happened to ideals. "We must never be blinded by the aesthetic magnificence of the purely theoretical," he told Gage. "Just like we cannot let ourselves be defined by the brute calculation of the solely practical. The practical grounds the dreams of the theoretical. The theoretical gives flight to the realities of the practical."
"Always," Gage said.
"Yes, always." Even in the heat of battle, and at the smallest level of the Legion's organization, the possible and the actual worked in symbiosis, and in their fusion was victory. That was more valuable than the pursuit of the unattainable. Fulgrim performed wonders chasing that goal, but Gilliman wondered what satisfaction he found in that. All he could imagine was eternal frustration. Observation, analysis, determination, execution. That cycle repeated until it led to a victory that had all the appearance of being inevitable. And perhaps it was. Preordained by the 13th Legion's philosophical machine of war. There was real satisfaction in that cycle. If Gilliman felt hunger, it was in the desire for the cycle's continued adaptation and adjustment. The endless lessons he learned assuaged that hunger, then pushed him towards its greater consideration and a new implementation. He did not seek perfection. The process was its own fulfillment.
"Lord Gilliman,"
Habron voxed.
I know,
Gilliman answered. He saw the change at the horizon. The boundary between land and sky was visible as an uneven line of deeper black beneath the firmament. The glitter of the stars ended, cut off by contours of eroded rock. Now the line moved and blurred. A huge mass was coming into view. Then there was light. It was ugly, smoky, crude, the belched flame of burning fuel and exploding fumes. It was, Gilliman thought, not true light at all. Savagery could illuminate nothing. It was the fire of barbarism, and nothing more. But it revealed the enemy. The clamor of the orcs came on before them. Carried by the perpetual west wind, the howling came from hundreds of thousands of animalistic maws, and from the grinding of engines so crude that they should already have been destroyed by catastrophic malfunctions. Gilliman's ear separated the roar of the orcs from the roar of the ultramarines. It was the difference between destructive instinct and purpose-led order. The difference between the monstrosity of the past and the infinite hope of the future. The armies raced towards each other. The brutish shrieking of the enemy became ecstatic as the orcs caught sight of the ultramarines.
"Someone should tell them they've lost their empire," Gage said.
"I doubt they even know what they had," said Gilliman.
The greenskins understood battle and the joy of pillage. He doubted their comprehension extended much beyond the frenzy of the moment. They were worthy foes if all one sought was the contest of strength. But they did not have true empires. They were infestations that spread across worlds. The ultramarines had quarantined this particular multi-system disease. Now they were going to wipe out the final infection.
"Do you have targets for us yet?" Gilliman asked Habron.
"Resolving them now,"
Habron said. As the greenskin horde came into sight, the Proteus's explorator cast the gaze of its scanners over the army. Cognis interpreters read movements, picked up on the currents that portended localized surges, and evaluated the points of disruption. Gilliman already knew the kind of target the explorator would select. He had already done so. What he wanted was the coordinates. The auger system's eyes were still better than his. They ranged much further.
"Found them," Habron said.
"Multiple vehicle clusters converging on a point directly ahead of our position."
Gilliman nodded. Flame of Illyrium was leading a great column, projecting out from the main force of the ultramarines. The column was the spear tip. It was also the bait. The orcs saw it first. There was no coordination in their attack. It was a colossal wave, stretching north and south far beyond Gilliman's sight, far wider than the span of the 13th Legion formations. The wave was a mass of individuals. Every brute fought on its own terms. The orcs triumphed over organized armies through numbers and crude strength. An illusion of strategy occurred when a large mob of raging individuals all chose the same target at once. Gilliman had given them their target so they would reveal to him what he sought.
Theoretical. The enemy can be made to conform to the battlefield.
Practical. This enemy knows only direct battle against the most visible target. Offer that target in controlled conditions, and you shape the encounter.
"I have coordinates for the largest concentration," Habron said.
"Relay them," Gilliman said.
Over the command channel he voxed,
"Gunships and artillery, you have your data. Fire at will."
The Basilisk and Whirlwind tanks began their attack first. A new order of thunder shook the land. Flights of vengeance missiles flashed overhead, their blazing contrails tearing open the curtain of night. A terrible strobing day lit the plain, turning the stony ground into a jagged mosaic of bleached white and knife-edged shadows. The deeper booms of the earth-shaker cannons of the basilisks followed. Gilliman glanced back to see the rows of barrels flare. He nodded, satisfied by the precision he saw, the rhythm of fire calculated to cause maximum damage to the enemy. He looked forwards again. From just over the horizon, deep in the midst of the orcs, the fireballs blossomed, first in a rapid accumulation as the missiles hit. Then the shells of the earthshakers came down, and their explosions were majestic. The blasts continued to multiply, spreading out from the initial target sites. Burning wreckage marched over the orcs as their vehicles, too close together and too volatile, detonated. The Thunderhawks streaked over the orcs. Heavy bombs fell from their pylon mounts. Violent dawn erupted from the core of the horde. Explosions radiated outwards from the center of the targeted area. The knight pulled back from the billowing, bellowing flame. The devastation already spread over a region hundreds of yards on a side. The gunships pulled away, and the artillery tanks fired again. Gilliman saw the impact of his first blow take hold as flame of Illyrium traveled over the final distance, separating the ultramarines from the orcs. The Legion's advance was sure, unbroken, a battering ram of Imperial technology. The wave of the orcs founded on the reef of a high-explosive barrage. Only a small portion of the green tide had been struck, but the effect was widespread. The burning vehicles created a lethal barrier before the onrushing brutes. The orcs in the lead turned in confusion as the battle suddenly seemed to have moved to their midst. This much Gilliman could see or extrapolate from the wall of flames rising in the near distance. "Update," he said to Habron. There was time for one more before the furnace of combat. The horde was like a huge, turbulent river. It had direction, yet the undisciplined movement of the mob created flows within of different speeds. He needed to know how the orc currents further out, the ones in the night, beyond the reach of the flames, were reacting. "Disorder in the currents," Habron reported. "The more distant portions of the horde are trying to push forwards towards the explosions. They're placing pressure on the center. Forward momentum is greatly reduced. There is very little coherence at this time."
"Good."
On the command channel, he said, "Theoretical, use the orcs against themselves. Practical, lure them into a semblance of order, then disrupt it. The rewards of our way of war await. Courage and honor!" He heard the war cry again. At the same moment, the sponson-mounted las cannons of the Proteus fired. The energy beams cut across the narrowing stretch of land that separated the ultramarines from the orcs. Across the width of the column, tanks poured las and heavy bolter shells into the enemy. Further back, the other chapters in the broader phalanx held their fire. They closed in on the orcs, an immense force ignored by the enemy. The Proteus's las beams burned a path through the orcs. Gilliman climbed out of the hatch. He crouched on Illyrium's roof, his left hand still held in Kandor. His right unlocked the arbitrator from his belt. His finger curled around the ornate trigger of the combi bolter. He waited for the tactical moment to leap from the tank to extend the force of the phalanx with his personal strength. There were new stenches in the air now. There was the cloying, foul animal musk of the greenskins. It was a biological aggression so sharp it sliced through the clouds of promethium. And there was the smell of burned flesh. Already many hundreds of greenskins had been blown apart and incinerated. The cloud of their death reached its tendrils across the plain. The leading column of the ultramarines plunged into the uproar of the enemy. The leading edge of the blade, the gladius stab into the orcs, was still 1,000 yards wide. Two rows of heavy armor came first, blasting greenskins to cinders and scraping them to bloody smears on the land with their siege blades. Behind the tanks came the legionaries of the first chapter. The sea of orcs milled and howled, pushed back, crushed and blown apart. But it truly was a sea, and the surge of roaring bodies, swollen with muscle and rage, crashed forwards again. The greenskins fired crude projectile firearms and wielded misshapen blades heavy enough to cut through steel. They were as confused as they were wrathful, and so it was the sheer crush of numbers that hurled them against the 13th Legion. Their attack lacked the force of their full charge. They ran into regimented bolter fire and a synchrony of chainswords. The companies marched into the wall of flesh. They cut the brutes down. They expanded the blade wound. Instinct and anger urged the orcs to destroy the enemy that had come into their midst. If they turned their eyes to the west and saw what was coming, either they ignored it for the immediate foe, or they did not understand the immensity of what they beheld. "The currents of the horde are still confused," Habron reported. "We are at the center of what focus they are managing." On the roof of Illyrium, Gilliman straightened. He held Incandor aloft, its silver flash a challenge to the orcs and a beacon to his sons. He sprayed a wide arc of the ground before the Proteus with the double-timed hammering of his shells. Mass reactive warheads punched into the bodies of the greenskins and exploded. They vaporized blood. They turned bone into shrapnel. fountains of ruptured flesh and Xenos blood sprayed upwards on all sides of the Proteus. It rained down on Gilliman. His face was soaked with the death of the foe. The roar of guns overwhelmed the roar of the orcs. A good start, Gilliman thought. A good first blow. Smoke covered the battlefield. He breathed it in. It rasped against the back of his throat. He savored the taste of a falling enemy. The first seconds of the clash belonged to the Ultramarines. Gilliman kept firing. The orcs died, and more rushed forwards. Flame of Illyrium bucked upwards as it climbed over a growing mound of bodies. The deafening chorus of snarls changed tone. The orcs were finding their direction again. The crush of numbers became a focused counterattack. They ceased to care about the barrage tearing apart their center. They wanted the legionaries. They wanted prey they could rip apart. The individual challenge, roared by thousands upon thousands of bestial voices, became a ferocious unity. In phalanxes 100 strong, the Ultramarines marched into the orcs. But their advance began to slow. The orcs lost their confusion. Gilliman looked right and cursed. It was too late to help, as the squad of Sergeant Tibron was overwhelmed by dozens of greenskins. The orcs leapt right into the bolter fire. The leading brutes went down, while their fellows lunged closer. The legionaries couldn't cut the orcs down fast enough. A huge beast slumped forwards, its chest blown out. It grabbed at its killer as it fell and knocked the barrel down. The orc behind jumped over the dying greenskin. It raised a chain axe over its head in mid-air. It brought the weapon down, smashing open Tibron's helmet and cleaving his skull in two. Beside him, two of his brothers disappeared under an avalanche of immense Xenos bodies. "Maintain course," Gilliman ordered Habron. "Invictari, with me." He leapt from the roof of the tank. The side hatches banged open, unleashing the honor guard on the greenskins. Gilliman fired into the orcs. He shredded them with bolter fire. He and the Invictari waded into their midst, drawing their attack and taking them apart while the squad regrouped. Gilliman blasted the orcs coming from the forward position. To his left, he jabbed Incandor through the forehead of another greenskin. The thick bones cracked like an eggshell from the force of his blow. The blade sliced through the orc's brain. He pulled the gladius out and stabbed again, killing another orc before the body of the first had hit the ground. "They think they have our measure," Gilliman called to the legion. "Instead, we have theirs." Ahead, a clanking behemoth crashed through the wreckage barrier. Gears screamed in their eagerness to prove Gilliman wrong.